Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined again this week by Jim Thomas, Blues beat reporter for the Post-Dispatch. JT, we're heading into the stretch run, and our heroes are sort of in a win-one, lose-one mode, and it seems like now is a really good time to get some traction, try to gain some momentum toward the playoffs.
Yeah, a couple things stand out here about what's going on. One, the Blues don't seem to do very well against the lesser lights. They're 15-8 with some ties against teams that are in the top 10. These are the elite teams, the Torontos, the San Jose's, the Calgary's, the Tampa Bay's of the world. They're 8-10 with some ties against bottom feeders, the bottom 10 teams. What's going on there, Jeff? Why can't they pound on these lesser guys?
I don't know. They just abused the Penguins, gave them the old rented mule treatment. Although, again, here at NetFront Presence, we do not condone the mistreatment of rented mules.
No. And no animals are ever harmed in the taping of
just
NetFront
saying.
Presence, just so you know.
Yeah, so they did rough up the Penguins. But then they come right back, and they obviously had a poor game against Ottawa and just okay game scrambling to come back to get the loser point against Buffalo. So, yeah, I mean, it was a big topic for the Chief today, and Craig Berube had a very simple answer, didn't he, Jim Thomas, about, well, what does he want to see against the lesser team?
Excuse me. And he said wins. And he also said, he thinks maybe they get more motivated when they're playing the top teams. But the problem is now, and it really shouldn't be a problem, 10 games left. There's only two teams that are currently in the playoffs among those 10 teams, Tampa Bay this coming Saturday, and then Vegas Tuesday. The rest are bottom dwellers, are close to the bottom of the league, and they've got to find a way to handle their business against the New Jersey Devils, the Detroit Red Wings. Even tonight, granted, one of the world's greatest players in Connor McDavid, but only 71 points, really on life support when it comes to the playoffs. They've got to win most of those games.
Yeah, interesting challenge coming back home. You mentioned, for those who hear this podcast before they play Edmonton, arguably the best player in the world right now, the speedster Connor McDavid. He gets your attention, and the Blues have paid attention to him fairly well. They've had the types of games they were hoping to have against Edmonton. They've been able to bracket him pretty good and not get into a crazy up-and-down skating game. It's been more of a checking game against them, and maybe this is what it takes. Is they've got to win some home games. Going into the playoffs, you've got to at some point demonstrate that you could use this to your advantage. You know, use the last change to your advantage, and just the atmosphere.
Yeah. And the Blues have done a great job against McDavid in at least the last couple of years. Except that don't get into overtime or a shootout. He had a shootout game winner back on December 5th.
Just clowning you.
It was, and I believe it was Jake Allen in net, and it was just
unfair. Felt like just made that look
it was
so
like,
easy.
Okay, now I'm gonna. I guess I'll put it in the net now. But yeah, 7 out of the last 10 at home, just based on points. Now some teams still have played more home and away, but 7 out of 10 at home. The Blues have one of the best road records in the league, and they're in like the bottom 6 in terms of home points. Although they did, back when they were really hot in the middle of that 11-game streak, they had a 7-game home winning streak, but now they've lost their last two. So they've got to reestablish home ice here a little bit as they finish up. I mean, because it's close. I mean, some recent results have helped out the Blues, but they've got Dallas 2 points back, Arizona 4 points back, and teams like Minnesota, maybe even Chicago, they're not done. If they get really hot, they could get back into the picture. But do I think the Blues will be in the playoffs? Yeah, but if they want that third place, and I don't know how you feel, Jeff, I don't know how you feel about the possibility of playing a Calgary San Jose if they fall into wild card land. But I say, especially the way they played Nashville, just – finish second or third and take your chances with the Preds. You beat them 4 in a row and 4 out of 5 this season.
And Jim Thomas and the rest of the media crew would be only too glad to go to Nashville for a couple of games. Why wouldn't you? Great atmosphere to see a hockey game, and even a better atmosphere for a traveler to go. What a fun city.
Yeah, fun city, and even us old geezers who don't carouse as much, it's nice to get a malted beverage or two on the on the road, listen to some music. Everything's pretty compact down there where the stadium is and the hotel. So, yeah, there's a lot of benefits to Nashville.
Now, the Blues are able to sort of reconfigure their offense now. First, they get David Perron back, and he settles in pretty quickly. Took him a while to get his win. He's still trying to get into game shape, but his skill made a difference right away. Just a talented guy who plays well against with other players and really rises to the challenge, especially when he gets a face one of his many former teams. And then now Vladimir Tarasenko also returning without the benefit of much practice, of course, but he's still just going to jump back in, and Tarasenko's Tarasenko. Well, now Craig Berube can do some different things up front. And what was Jim Thomas's perception of what he's come up with, his first stab at being at full strength up front?
The interesting, of course, you have to reunite Sean O'Reilly, Tarasenko. That's a no-brainer. They've been together starting with the winning streak, 13 games. There was a game way back in like December or maybe late November where they were together, inconsequential. But talking the 13 games since the start of the 11-game winning streak, you have to put them back together. They have 56 points, 21 goals, 35 assists. One member of that group, now granted some has been on the power play, but that trio is usually on the power play unit together. At least one member of that group has scored a goal in all 13 of those games. And the other thing, they're 13-0 in those games. So that's a no-brainer. You put them together. The interesting thing I thought was, what would he do with that Maroon, Bozak, Thomas line? And I thought in my mind maybe he'd split them up, but he said today, and it makes sense. That line really has played very well together for whatever reason. And I think Thomas is good for Thomas is good for Maroon. Maroon all of a sudden has sprung to life. So the surprise today was, and it came out as the second line. Maybe it's interchangeable with the Bozak, Maroon, and Thomas line. But the second line has our boy, our guy, Sonny Sundquist, as the center with Schwartz, flanked by Schwartz and Perron. And what an amazing rise, just kind of further redemption or a validation of Sundquist's breakout season. Back when camp started, probably most of us said he's probably not going to make the team. Who would have thought in the middle of a playoff run at the crunch time of the regular season, Sonny Sundquist on the second line? You might have asked for me to be drug tested, Jeff.
In
September.
You've taken a liking to Sonny, but and because he's a pleasant lad, and but we were all amazed that out of the pile that he emerged. Now, eventually, Robert Thomas became the guy that many thought he would be this year. So he forced his way in there, and Shen has progressed, moving to the wing, playing some over there. Now he's had a good finish. So a lot of the other pieces have come together. But even given that, Barbashev's been fine. I mean, there have been some guys you thought would be okay this year, but Sonny's just made his way. And now for him to get a chance to play in a good two-way line with two guys with ability, Schwartz has struggled offensively, but the skill is there. And certainly Perron's a guy that plays very well with other skilled guys. It just creates opportunities. And there you go. That's going to be a nice two-way line.
Yeah. And the thing that surprised me, obviously, the goals came, and we're like, okay, Sundquist can score some goals. The thing that surprised me kind of after that, a little more subtle, is he's, I think, very underrated as a passer. So now, as you say, you put him on that line. Perron, obviously great with the puck management. Schwartz is too. That's a pretty good, it's a hard-working line, but should be a pretty good passing and puck management team. And this, one of the first things that Berube did when he took over is he took Shen out of the center spot and put him on wing. And I don't think this is forever, but he did the same thing with Thomas, putting Thomas on the wing, giving him a little less maybe defensive responsibilities that you would see at the center position. And so that's kind of opened the door for Sonny. The other very interesting thing, and I guess we didn't really ask Berube about it today, is that Alexander Steen, who's been a stalwart of the Blues over the years, had a great career, recently played his 700th game, is 2 points away from being part of only the fourth father-son act in NHL history to have 600 points apiece. Of course, Jeffy's been stuck on 598
right,
for a few games now. Anyway, Alexander Steen now on the fourth line, McEachern going to watch for a while. So and interesting that Sanford, who's revived himself a little bit, has survived, and so you've got Sanford on the fourth line with Steen and Barbashev at center.
Well, and this really is a deep lineup. I mean, yeah, Steen's on the fourth line, but he can kill penalties and he can get some time on the power play, depending on how the two units fit together. He's a guy that certainly has played both special teams. Odds are he's going to get a fair amount of ice time, not the 18 minutes of a top-line guy would get, not the 16 minutes he's used to. It may be more like 12, but you've got ability on that line. Sanford's a guy that's got at least top nine potential. Steen's been there. And to have those guys on your quote-unquote fourth line is good. I mean, now you've got talent spread out. You know, you talk about the Maroon, Bozak, Thomas line being effective. Well, you know, something's got to give. Those guys have earned it. You certainly, Sonny's earned it. You want Schwartz and to play a lot along with Perron. And so this is it. This is kind of what we thought would be interesting about this team way back when the season started. Maybe not in the configuration we see today.
Right.
But
right.
Just in terms of the volume of guys who with some ability.
Yeah, yeah. And I give Berube credit for you know, Steen is, you know, he's had a great great career for doing this. It's probably not an easy thing. This is a guy that's still, he's wearing the A. He's an alternate captain, but of course we you and I both said this about Bomeister, Father Time undefeated, and then Bomeister kind of made liars of us with his revival, pretty amazing revival. But Steen is just, he struggled almost all year long. He started out, his production looked like he was going to have a better offensive year, but then a variety of injuries, a concussion, looked like another concussion, a shoulder. He missed a couple days with illness, misses a couple games when his wife gives birth to a daughter. He's just had trouble finding the net. When he scored 11 games ago, he hasn't had a point since then. And when he scored that goal, he'd gone like, it was over 20 games without a goal. He doesn't look like he's skating that well, and never a fast skater, at least in recent years, right?
Right.
Maybe he was faster earlier.
Yeah, you know, in his heyday, what he was going to do for you, he was when he was more productive, he was a skate-and-shoot guy. He could go up and down the wing. He did have a nice shot off the wing, and he would pump a lot of pucks on goal. He was the kind of guy that could do some real damage two ways. One, you know, on the rush, because he'd get out and he'd shoot off the wing. And two, then he would also have some success going around the net. He was willing to stick the nose. And while he's lost half of that, the skate-and-shoot part, you know, he used to be a volume shooter, would generate plenty of chances, would be on the counterattack, was dangerous. That part's gone. And, you know, and I think just through all the variety of injuries, so too the ability to get a lot of that garbage around the net. And that's so really he was effective a couple ways offensively in his heyday, but now his heyday is past. And, you know, he still can serve a valuable role here. But, you know, it's just, we've seen it. It's unfortunate that a guy with that much pride is in his position. And as far as the Blues are concerned, it's unfortunate that a guy making that kind of money ends up in that
still
position.
With,
but here we are.
Still with 2 years left on
right.
his contract as well. But, yeah, the band's almost back together and just in time for the playoffs. You know, knock wood that they don't have any more injuries. But Perron, to me, especially missing 24 games, I mean, for him to step in and look as good as he did is surprising to me. Shen, I didn't think it'd be that tough a transition. He only missed 6 games. That was over 2 weeks. Now, Vladdy's missed 5 games, but it's only over 10 games. He hasn't, you know, he should be able to step right in, Tarasenko, I don't know if he's going to score goals at the pace he was, but I would think he won't look too different from what he did. I'm pretty sure it's an elbow injury, so nothing to worry about his shoulder or concussion. And my gosh, you've got to like how they're set up now for the stretch run and for the playoffs. Now, you still got some injuries. Sammy Blais, you know, here at Net Front Presence, we're on the Sammy Blais bandwagon, but he's in a walking boot right now, and that doesn't mean everything. It's like, oh, my gosh, because earlier this season, Barbashev was in a walking boot and played that night. He was in a walking boot in the morning, so hockey players, I mean, you know, go figure. Edmondson has been skating, and I think he's a key part, you know, a top four defenseman. So he's been skating on his own, so that's a good sign. And Gunnarsson, that wrist injury, hasn't had surgery, just been nagging and nagging and nagging. He told me last week that he hopes to be back in about a week or so. Well, there's not much left of the regular season, not even 3 weeks. But if they get Edmondson back and we were talking before we came on air, though. You like what you've seen from Delzato. He certainly hasn't hurt the Blues, has he?
No, I mean, Berube knows him. He's an offensive-minded guy who will also hit people. He's not going to put up the numbers he once did as a younger player, but he's got great instincts. And on a team that's got a lot of offense from the blue line that activates the D, that wants to sustain pressure, that wants to pin teams in and then have the D jump in as the extra shooter, all of that's good for him. Mm-hmm. And he'll get some opportunities. Can he hold up well enough at the defensive end? Well, you know, Craig Berube mentioned that's still what he's learning about the coverage preferences, the system, the disciplines that this group uses. Real helpful guy. Now, the question, which is interesting, if you do get Edmondson back and you got to get him up to speed, same with Gunnarsson, because talking to our other colleague on NetFront Presence, Tom Timmerman, during the skate, he said, you know, Vince Dunn is getting some tough matchups here at the other end. Now, Vince has been a tremendous offensive asset. You know, he's Kevin Shattenkirk part two. He can go and make a play. Defensively, he's also Kevin Shattenkirk part two. And so Kevin was not a first-pairing defenseman. Yeah. You don't want him out against top opposing units. You don't want him in the top four. You want him playing against third and fourth lines. And right now, that's not the case. So getting Edmondson back, getting Gunnarsson back, will also take pressure on Dunn. He'll have his place. Mm-hmm. And he'll be a key offensive guy, and he'll be on the power play. But he won't have the matchups now where he could find himself in some peril.
Yeah.
You don't want him out tonight against either, you know, the Dreisaitl and McDavid nightmare.
Yeah, and I think he's done better defensively in recent weeks. But, yeah, that's a big leap from the third pairing to the first pairing. And it makes all the sense in the world. Put him back on the third when Edmondson's back. And it's not like Edmondson's missed a lot of time, so I would think, you know, assuming he's back pretty soon, it would be a pretty quick transition. Now, Jeffrey, what I want to ask you, now 7 out of 10 games at home, we've seen a fair amount of Jake Allen. Jake Allen has not – he may need directions to the Enterprise Center from his home. He has not played at home since January 8th. Just kind of a – I'll call it – you may have other description – just kind of a so-so outing for Jake against Buffalo. I think you got to go hard with Binnington on these home games. I mean, will we see Jake Allen at Enterprise Center the rest of the season here?
Well, I think the Chiefs done a good job with Jake under the circumstances. You know, he has a good game and on the road out west, so he gets another game. And you're also taking some pressure off of Binnington, who was accumulating quite a bit of playing time.
Yeah, keep him fresh. And Allen was really good against San Jose. I think he helped them steal a point in that game.
So, yeah, and I mean, it's unfortunate that they just got the point in, you go looking on this most recent trip, 6 points would have been great. You didn't expect to beat Pittsburgh that easily. So having banked that, then you really would have wanted four.
Right, yeah.
You didn't get it, but nonetheless, here you are. You're in pretty good shape coming home. Yeah, I would play Binnington. If there's a way before the end of the year with things in hand to give Jake a start at home just to do it, because obviously, Jake's a guy that presses. It's real easy to see his body language when he presses. He's a guy that's where Binnington has a calm playing style. He's very composed, just the way he plays. Jake is more aggressive. And so when Jake gets more anxious, that aggression becomes pronounced or exaggerated. And he starts flying around too much. And it's real easy to see when he's starting to get anxious. And the fans see it. The team sees it. You start seeing him move around. Where Binnington is like the picture of calm out there. Just, you know, sometimes he'll get beat because he's not as aggressive. But you know what? He's generally where he's supposed to be and generally under control, which is huge. So Jake at home just seems like an anxious goaltender. On the road, not as much. Because he knows what the fans are saying. He can hear him boo.
Sure.
You know, God forbid that he actually, you know, looks in the chat rooms or in the Blues talk. Jim Thomas or the Tom Timmerman or the Jeff Gordon chats. He takes a beating in all of them. Not so much from us, but from the fans.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it just, You want to get him a start in there somewhere, preferably when everything's under control, against a bad team, when you really don't need the win, if you get to that point in the schedule. Right now, you got to still assume it's the playoffs. You got to play this like you got to pretend this is a playoff game,
right?
Until you're situated otherwise, and you can rest guys.
Yeah. No, I said on the podcast last week, they're a horrible week away from being in playoff jeopardy. It wasn't a great week, 1-2-1 if you count the home game with Arizona, but not a good week. So yeah, you do, and you don't have any back to backs on this 4-game homestand. Maybe you just go, you ride Bennington for all 4 games. Hopefully, kind of solidify your playoff position. You do have a back to back on the road, New Jersey and Rangers. Not this weekend, but the next weekend. So you can get Jake one start there, and I believe the last week there's a home and home also. But I really, you make a great point about you've got to somehow figure out a way to give Jake one home start, because heaven forbid, again, assuming the Blues are in the playoffs, what if something should happen with Bennington and Jake Allen hasn't handled that, I don't know what's the word, the threshold or whatever, the atmosphere of playing again at Enterprise for the first time since January 8th. So the playoffs will start, what, about the second week of April? So what is that, February, March? That would be three months without being in the place. So they got to get him out there sometime. We've decided here on net front, we're gonna find at least one start at home for Jake Allen in these final 10 games.
And like always in the situation, the Chief will be looking to see one thing he doesn't want to have happen to Bennington. If the team's terrible or if he has a couple of bad goals, he's going to want to get him out and use that as another way to get Allen into the mix. You know, turn a negative into a positive. So he will be mindful that he doesn't want anything bad to happen to Bennington. Doesn't want him to get hurt. Doesn't want him to lose his edge. So if he sees any sign of something going bad in the game, maybe the team's just playing terribly and they're hanging him out there, you're going to see him go to use that as an opportunity as well to address the Allen hasn't played at home in months thing, because it is a thing. At this point, it's a thing.
I
think he's aware.
Oh, yeah.
That he's not actually playing
at
home.
Is. He's been saying for weeks and weeks. I've seen the home and road splits with Jake Allen. Yes, it does factor in. He may not be the chattiest guy, Berube. Mike Yeo could fill up your digital recorders, and I wouldn't know, but you were there for Hitchcock. Certainly not the glibest, the best copy. But Chief, he usually lets you know where he stands. That's for sure.
No, he doesn't feel. I mean, every now and then he'll bite his tongue. He doesn't want to say too much about certain situation. But he's diplomatic about it. He needs to see more from some guys. He likes some things that he's saying, some things that concern him. He'll tell you the way it is. And I think the players have responded. It is interesting to hear guys continue to talk about the stability that Berube has brought, because we've talked about in net front presence, Mike Yeo early on was just scrambling. Every game he was scrambling to put something together. During every game he was scrambling to get results. It wore on the team. Now, even though Berube is moving guys around because of guys coming and going with injuries in particular, he has been looking to get guys together. And you mentioned, hey, let's look at Maroon and Thomas and how those two guys have worked together and Bozak and see how that, and let's maybe keep riding that. And Perron plays great with O'Reilly and Shen, but then again, Tarasenko was fabulous. So let's go to that. And Perron was talking about that. Just since he took over, there's been a sense of guys settling into their roles and then finding comfort in that. Unfortunately for Jake Allen, his role is road goalie, and Bennington's his role is lead goalie.
Be a reality series,
but that's
right?
But you know what?
Road goalie on True TV, right?
No. Yeah, I'm road goalie. But at least he knows, right? And everybody knows, and this is the way it is.
Players like to know where they stand. I think that's true for any sport. And I've learned in the hockey that they do like continuity on the lines. There have been only a couple of games where you saw the massive in-game line changes from Berube, which you saw especially at the end when poor Mike Yeo was, oh my God.
You couldn't keep up with him.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And so, yeah, The stability is good. Hey, just one last tangent, just back on Bennington. Wasn't he fabulous against Pittsburgh? I think maybe, other than the Tampa game, that had to be about the best game he's
well,
played.
Sure. You know, and again, a lot of what he does is understated because he isn't, you know, making as many circus
saves. Because he's so positionally sound.
Yeah. I mean, you're going against some of the best players of all time, not just in the game today, but of all time, Hall of Fame guys. And he was reading the play. He was getting from, so he was moving well, reading the play, but staying, you know, staying composed. I mean, just the team fed off of that. They had some breakdowns, and Pittsburgh had some guys walking in, and he said, if you could pick the corner, I'm where I'm supposed to be. And yeah, he is just nonplussed by, he's just a guy that, unfazed,
yeah,
really,
and a little
plays unfazed.
Little bump in the road a while back, but just a little bump, and he definitely looks back on his game. And Jeff, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it's pretty rare, isn't it? Once the playoffs start, for teams to use two goalies.
No, everybody agrees on that. That you know you need to. The Blues have been stuck in that position just because of the lack of a true number one. You know, Brian Elliott and Jake Allen had good times together. There have been other combinations where the duo system did work. It's preferable because the guy in net knows, unless he's brutal, he's going to be the guy. And if he's having a rough game, maybe he'll come out, but he'll come right back and be the starter of the next game. And that's just the way it's going to be. That confidence will allow him to regroup. He doesn't have to worry about losing the gig. If he loses the game, he knows he's got to pull himself back together and be ready for the next game. And the team responds. The player responds, the team responds, and you sink or swim with that guy. If the coach doesn't know who the goalie is and the team doesn't know who the goalie is and the goalies don't know who the goalie is, that's a lot of doubt to have all at one time, at a time when you don't. You want definition come playoff time. Mm-hmm. And you want guys to really believe, this is what I'm doing. This is my thing. This is what I'm tasked to do. So, and the only way a guy can get better and better, which is what you have to do come postseason, is to just keep playing. And, you know, maybe there's a glitch in there somewhere, you come out. But ultimately you have to settle in and go, or you don't. Either you keep getting better or you don't. But if you start flipping around and you're switching everything up, and particularly in goal, you know, that's no way to build. And so, yeah, this is – I think everybody's comfortable with this. You know, it's tough on Jake, but –
He's handled it well. You mentioned Berube, and Berube has handled it very well. But I think Jake he's handled it very well, especially a guy used to getting a lot of work these last two, 3 years.
So, JT, you're looking down the stretch. We've talked about the goalie situation, Sonny's emergence, the possibility of defensemen returning. I guess one last time before the end of the regular season, last thing for Net Front Presence this time around, will we get the Jaden Schwartz breakout so that he goes into the playoffs as a new man? Perron mentioned that maybe the restart for him comes when the playoffs start and everybody's at zero. But I think it still would be nice for him to get a little confidence between now and then. There's still a little time left for him to have a breakout.
No doubt. And there were back during the break, the All-Star break and the bye period, the Blues had like five guys that were not there. And you're like, okay, you don't need all five of them, but the more you can get. So Tarasenko's come back. Petro's come back. Lately, anyway, Maroon's come back. So that leaves you with Schwartz and Steen. Now, if you could get one of those guys to do something, and it would seem the best candidate is Schwartz, well, then you really have something. And he just seems like he's, to me, Jaden Schwartz, like he just lacking confidence. And he just, you see the stick handling, you see the possession time, you see him in the corners battling for pucks, but when he has a chance to shoot or pass, it just doesn't seem like it's there. You should be able to do that stuff, especially a veteran, without thinking, you know?
Yeah, the last thing you should do on a hockey rink is think, because you got to be reacting and playing. If you're out there mulling it over, game's too fast to mull stuff over.
And just one last thing before we go, will we see Robbie Fabry again after that awful, awful play where he just kind of stood there in Ottawa?
I'm not going to. I mean, I'm sorry, but until a bunch of guys get hurt. We're just going to play the guys that I'm going to play. I don't care.
I like the way you phrase it. He's until a bunch of guys get
hurt. Yeah, because, you know, it's just the Chiefs like, hey, I owe it to the team. We're going with the best guys. And, you know, and they'll tell Robbie, you know, just keep practicing. Who knows? Maybe you'll get a shot again. But I don't think the Chiefs too concerned about feelings at this point. He knows this team has a chance to do something good. And this team has an opportunity to make a run. I don't think the Western Conference is too tall a hill. Now, we talk about Tampa.
Not this year.
We don't talk about Tampa. That might be a different story, and we'll see that firsthand later in the week. But this year, who knows? So that's our ray of hope for our listeners of NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon. That was Jim Thomas. A reminder that NetFront Presence and all of our podcasts are available at stltoday.com/podcast, iTunes, Google Play, your favorite apps for app stores for podcasts. We have a lot of cool stuff going on at STL Today. Also, a reminder to give that trial run of a digital subscription a shot if you haven't already. Much better user experience and also a way to support good local journalism. Well, JT, until next time, for again, Gary Harrelson, our executive producer, see ya!